was spoken by the great sages. It was very sweet to hear, full of meaning, and appropriately presented as perfectly true. So, after hearing them, Maharaj preached it, desiring to hear of the activities of Lord Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, congratulated the great sages. There's no purport. I'll read the next text. Samagata sarvata eva sarve vedayata murti dharastri prishte nehata namutra cha kaschanarta vite par anugraham atmashilam. Go ahead.
Translation. The king said, O great sages, you have all very kindly assembled here, having come from all parts of the universe. You are all as good as supreme knowledge personified, who resides in the planet above the three worlds, Satyaloka. Consequently, you are naturally inclined to do good to others, and but for this, you have no interest, either in this life or in the next. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Six kinds of opulences, namely wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation, are all originally the different attributes pertaining to the absolute personality of Godhead. The living beings who are part and parcel entities of the Supreme Being have all these attributes partially up to the full strength of 78%. In the material world, these attributes, up to 78% of the Lord's attributes, are covered by the material energy, as the sun is covered by a cloud. The covered strength of the sun is very dim compared to the original glare, and similarly, the original color of the living beings with such attributes becomes almost extinct. There are three planetary systems, namely the lower worlds, the intermediate worlds, and the upper worlds. The human beings on earth are situated at the beginning of the intermediate worlds. But living beings like Brahma and his contemporaries live in the upper worlds, of which the topmost is Satyaloka. In Satyaloka, the inhabitants are fully cognizant of Vedic wisdom, and thus the mystic cloud of material energy is cleared. Therefore, they are known as the Vedas personified. Such persons, being fully aware of knowledge, both mundane and transcendental, have no interest in either the mundane or transcendental worlds. They are practically desireless devotees. In the mundane world, they have nothing to achieve, and in the transcendental world, they are full in themselves. Then why do they come to the mundane world? They descend on different planets as messiahs by the order of the Lord, to deliver the fallen souls. On the earth, they come down and do good to the people of the world in different circumstances, under different climatic influences. They have nothing to do in this world save and except reclaim the fallen souls rotting in material existence, deluded by material energy.
Samagata sarvata eva sarve vedayata murti taras tripishte nehata namutracha kaschanarta rite paranugraham atmashilam. Well, this is a correct analysis of the saintly devotees. They only have one business, and that business is to reclaim the fallen souls. Their position, they don't need to try for liberation. Bhakti Stvaya Srila Bilva Mangal Thakur has written a very nice verse in his book, Krishna Karnamrita. He says, Mukti Mukulitanjani Sevate Sman Dharmartha Kama Samaye Pratiksha. That Mukti, since I have been engaged in devotional service to Krishna, meditating on the form of the Lord. The form of the Lord is Divya Kishore Murti. Divya means transcendental. Kishore means young man in his teenage years. Kishore, 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 Kishori. And Murti means the form. So this is from his own experience, because Bilba Mangal Thakur, his experience was quite interesting and instructive. He was born in South India, the Dravidadesh, and he was in a very wealthy Brahmin family. Generally, Brahmins are not wealthy, but sometimes they are. So his family was not only Shuchinam, but it was also Srimatam. Formerly, in his previous life, he had performed devotional service up to the level of Bhava Bhakti, ecstatic love. But somehow or other, he didn't finish. He didn't complete it. So he had to take birth again, but he took his birth in a very aristocratic family. But he became an impersonalist. Not only that, but because it was a wealthy family, those who are wealthy, often they become addicted to women and intoxication. So he also became addicted to at least women, and he had a very beautiful girlfriend prostitute named Chintamani. So happened that one day after the performance of the Shraddha ceremony. Do you know what Shraddha ceremony is? Give him a microphone.
When somebody, anyone has left his body, then is one ceremony, his name is Shraddha ceremony. Because is in Indian tradition, when he's left his body, is actually he is no nice karma, then so many Brahmana Vaishnavas together and pray to.
Yes, the forefathers, if the forefathers, after they pass away, if they find themselves in some difficult position, sometimes they even get put into hell. But if the son or the grandson performs the Shraddha ceremony, then the forefathers are liberated. They offer prasadam to Vishnu on behalf of the departed souls. So this ceremony was going on, and he was chanting the mantras, and he was going, but his mind was thinking of Chintamani the whole time. Couldn't stop thinking, oh, I want to go with her. And he was telling the priest, you know, please, can you go quicker? Make it a little faster. I need to go somewhere. So this was going on. Finally, when the ceremony was over, he asked his servants, do you have some food? They packed up some food in a bag, and he went out. But that night was a huge rainstorm. It was a terrible storm. The rain, the thunder was coming down in torrents. But he decided to go anyway because he was thinking Chintamani. So he finally reached the river, but the river was just waves, huge waves, and there was no boats. So how could he get across? So he thought, I'll have to swim across. What do you think of that, Ramachandra? Yes. So he started swimming. And he thought he saw something floating, and he thought, oh good, this is a log. I can grab onto the log and I'll be able to kick myself across. But it turned out it was a floating dead body. It wasn't a log at all. So he grabbed onto it and tried to kick himself across, and he realized, oh boy, this is really a dead body. Then finally he made it across the river, and he came to her house, but she thought, she was already thinking, oh, I'm sure that Billamongol is not coming tonight on such a night. So she locked the door and locked the gate. She bolted the door and locked the gate. So he came to her house. He couldn't get in. The gate was locked. So he thought he saw a rope, and he grabbed the rope, but it was a cobra. And he pulled him. He was pulling himself up by the cobra, and somehow or other he didn't get bitten by the cobra. He got over. Finally, he reached her door. He was pounding on the door. He was all wet, bedraggled. He was burning with desire. He was completely exhausted. And he finally banging on the door, and she came to the door, astonished. Oh, Bilbo Mongol, how could you come on such a night like this? How did you get across the river? He told her. He said, but how did you get through the over the gate? Why? He told her it was a snake. He said, what about the? So anyway, he said, yes. Oh, so you finally came. You have so much attraction for this body made of stool and urine and mucus. You have so much love for me. If only you had had so much love and attraction for Krishna, then your life would have been sublime. So this was, it was like a thunderbolt. You can just imagine. He worked so hard to get to her, and then she tells him, you know, if you had only done this for Krishna, then your life would be successful. And in his previous life, he was a great devotee. So he said, yes, you're right. You're right. This is ridiculous. So she advised him to go to Vrindavan. He said, yes, I'm going to go to Vrindavan. So he left immediately her house, and he went to Vrindavan. And on the way to Vrindavan, he stayed at one night he stayed at the home of a very well-to-do mercantile man. But the mercantile man's wife was very beautiful, and he hadn't given up his attraction to beautiful women. He was accustomed to this before, so he was pursuing the wife. He was looking at her and always walking. So she went to her husband. She told him. She said, "This man is, you know, he's really after me. What should I do?" So the husband, he went to Bilbo Mongol. He said, "My dear sir, you appear to be a very nice Brahmin, very aristocratic, very learned, cultured. Why are you following my wife? What's wrong?" And he said, "Well," he said plainly, he said, "Yes, I'm following your wife because I'm attracted to her beauty." So the husband said, "All right," told his wife, "he's a saintly Brahmin. You can serve him." So she was confused. She was thinking this was not proper, but because of the instruction. So, the husband. So she agreed. So they were, he was in the room with her, and then Bilbo Mongol said, "Mother, please give me the pins of your hair, hairpins." So, woman's not supposed to have her hair loose in front of anyone except her husband. So, but this whole thing was, she was finding it very difficult. And she said, "Yes, I can give you the pins, but why do you want them?" And he said, "No, I have some reason, just give me." So she took the pins, you know, long pin, hairpins. You've seen any elderly ladies? I remember my grandmother used to have long pins. She tied up her hair like that. Sometimes the women, they tie up their hair also with these pins. So she took out the pins, she gave them to him, and he immediately said, "It is these rascal eyes that are destroying me." He poked out his eyes, became blind. He said, "Now no more problems with these eyes." So then he was blind. So he kept on going to Vrindavan, even blind. Somehow or other, he found his way. People were guiding him. He was saying, "Where's Vrindavan?" They would point him in the right direction. So finally he reached Vrindavan. And he began to perform severe austerities, fasting, not eating very much, and chanting. And every day one coward boy would come and bring him milk. And he said, why? The coward boy said, why are you fasting here? Nobody's supposed to fast in this place. And he said, if anyone fasts, I bring the milk. So he was bringing the milk every day and made sure that he had a safe place to rest at night. So in this way, he was bringing him milk and food, and he would sing and dance, but he would never even touch Bilwamangal. So Bilwamangal was... Then one day he played his flute. And when he did that, then Bilwamangal went into ecstasy, and he understood that this is the Lord of my life. This is the same Lord I'm always meditating on, Krishna. Bihari Lal. So then he reached out for Krishna. He knew this boy was Krishna now. He wanted to touch the Lord, but the Lord, he touched his hand and said, that's all right. And so he became filled with ecstasy, prema, and he stayed there for 700 years under a tree. So he quoted this verse that now that I'm liberated, or now that I'm engaged in seeing the Lord, what do I need with liberation? She's standing with folded hands, Mukuli Tanjani Sevatesma, along with Dharma, religion, and sense gratification, kama, and artha, economic development. What do I need? If the Lord's bringing me milk, what else do I need for liberation? So this is his personal experience. Question?
Two questions. One was he able to see Krishna? I mean, Krishna like appeared with him mentally.
Yes, he could see him, the Lord.
But he couldn't see anything.
He was blind physically, but the Lord appeared to him, yes.
And the other question is, it was, in the purport it was talking about how the human beings are at the beginning of the intermediate planetary system. We hear how they're different levels. In Mahabharata, you hear details of how Arjuna went north.
We're in the eighth. We're
so
there's seven lower and seven upper.
No, yeah, but I mean, it said in the intermediate, because that's seven lower and seven upper. But we're in the intermediate. But that we're in the beginning of the intermediate species, who are in the middle. So can you explain?
Yes, Bhur, Bhuva, Sva. So there's three. Bhur, Bhurloka is the middle planetary system, the earthly planets, Bhurloka. That's what we're on, Bhurloka. Then Bhuvarloka, next higher up. Then Svargaloka comprises the upper planetary systems. So we're just at the beginning of the middle planetary systems.
What does that mean in terms of what kinds of other... I mean, that means we're the most primitive in the intermediate planets. What are the other intermediate species?
The other intermediates, they're described there. Of course, you see, we're part of the Bhumandala. So the Bhumandala means the circle going out on the earthly sphere. So the earthly sphere goes, it extends from the center of the universe all the way out to the edge of the universe where the coverings begin. So it goes out 4 billion miles across. And it's described that in the beginning there's Jambudvip, and then there's an ocean of salt water surrounding. Then there's another, what's the next one? Plakshadvip, something like that. There's another, this is an island, but it's in a circle. And then it goes, that surrounds the whole
saltwater ocean. Then outside that, there's another ocean. There's a liquor ocean.
So there's many islands.
All those
Yahu
islands.
Dweep, and then these are different.
Dweep. Yeah.
Yeah, I never understood that description before.
Lakshadweep, and then Pushkar. Then they all go out, and they're all going out to the end of the universe. So that's all on the Bhur Loka.
So, my mother once told me a story about a young man she went to college with who took LSD and started reading the Bible, and he read the verse where it says, "If thy eye offends thee, pluck it out." And so he pulled both of his eyes out. And so I was thinking in this way, you know, thinking in terms of, you know, if the eye offends thee, pluck it out. If the hand offends thee, cut it off. One might think, well, then I may as well just kill myself because my whole body is just so lusty and offensive. And yet we know that when Sanatana Goswami tried to throw himself off a Govardhan Hill, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you know, if I could kill myself to get love of Godhead, I would have done it millions of times already. So what's the practical application of this? I mean, you know, somebody like Bilba Mangal Thakur plucks his eyes out, but does that mean that I should pluck my eyes out also?
It would have been better if Bilba Mangal Thakur could have realized, what am I doing? This is nonsense. And he had just been able to go and worship the deity and associate with devotees. And yes, that was a very extreme thing. He left out all the other, the better options. He acted very rashly. But he was fortunate that he had some sincerity and he actually made it to Vrindavan. How many blind men make it to Vrindavan? There's many blind men. Simply being blind doesn't solve lust. Have you ever preached to a blind man? I've preached to a blind man. They're as lusty as the non-blind men. Do you think that just being blind means he's free from lust? No, he's full of lust. So, simply cutting out the eyes doesn't free one from lust. What frees one from lust is going to Vrindavan and performing austerities, meditating on Krishna, chanting the holy name. Another name for Bilba Mangal Thakur is Lila Shuka. He's so exalted in relishing the mellows, the higher mellows of the pastimes of the Lord, and relating those mellows. This book, Krishna Karnamrita, was a very famous book. Lord Chaitanya received this book and he said, this book is first class, and he told all of his disciples to read it. It's a very famous book now amongst Vaishnavas. There's no book like it in some ways. In fact, he was famous as being the one of the first among the Vaishnavas to he lived in the 9th century, so he was one of the first to expound on the Madhurya Ras. So the answer is that it's better not to pluck out your eyes, but you better use them properly, otherwise it's better to pluck them out. Yes, it is better to be degraded. The Bible is correct. In other words, if we're going to be degraded and we're not going to try to do anything about it, then yes, well, what is the use of living? But better than committing suicide or plucking out the eyes, why don't you use your eyes the way they're supposed to be used?
I want to ask, when he was blind, he have himself write the book, or he instruct somebody else?
The question is, after he was blind, did he write it himself, or did someone else? That information is not available. At least I don't have that information. Either way, there is examples of one blind in Vrindavan. Those of you who have been to Vrindavan, you know
There's one beautiful painting of Radha Krishna that was painted by a blind man. You ever seen that? You know that painting? What's the name of it? Is there some special name? Do you have a microphone? Microphone.
When I'm 12 years old, this time every year I'm making a Durga Pratima in village. And when I'm 10 years old, one man is blind, totally blind. He can't see anything. And when he comes, make a deity of Krishna and put, you know, this.
No, I was speaking about the painting. There's a painting of Krishna.
A painting of Krishna, and he's making a deity also.
There's a beautiful painting of Krishna by this man who was completely blind.
He's blind. Krishna and Radha Krishna painting and making deities, he's totally blind. I saw him in our village. You know, every year he's coming and painting Radha Krishna.
Oh, that's a different one. This is quite some in the past. Yeah? Yeah. Vibhishan?
I saw it. But in Bhashana, paintings, you are climbing to one very small monastery on the top of the hill, and the painting is describing the dancing of the peacocks.
So there you have it, that even blind, Mukam karoti vachalam bhangam langayate girim yat kripatamaham vande shigaram dinatara. Even if one is blind, he can see the stars in the sky. So by the grace of Krishna or the grace of Guru, anything can be done. And it's also possible that he spoke it, just like Prabhupada. He recited, he didn't actually write down all of his Bhagavatam. He just spoke into a dictating machine, and then his disciples wrote it down. Also, Vyasadeva, his disciples were writing. Question there?
This question's a little off the topic, but it's pretty good question.
From
UK. It is associating with other Vaishnavas that don't follow all of Prabhupada's instructions. For example, they think that having sex with one's wife is not a problem. Is that okay?
Okay for what? If we want to make spiritual advancement, watch out. If we want to make spiritual advancement, we have to associate with advanced devotees. So if somebody doesn't understand the basic principle, this is not even a spiritual principle. This is material principle even. This is Varnashram. We're not even talking about spiritual life yet. If one can't understand the importance of what the use of sex life is. Dharma viruddho bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshva. This is just human life. Controlling the senses. So if someone is not controlling the senses, he's not Grihastha, he's Grihamedi. Grihamedi is not making spiritual advancement. It doesn't matter what the designation may be, this organization, that organization, we have to follow the religious principles. We have to follow Krishna's instructions. We cannot make up our own religion. That's why Prabhupada made such a strong point that religion is taken as a kind of faith, but it's not a kind of faith. It's the orders, the instructions given by the Supreme Lord. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.